Welcome to We Are Future Proof Podcasts. How can you build a car with truly environmentally sane credentials? Today we're interviewing Hugo Spowers from the group River Simple. He's developed a prototype of a hydrogen fuel cell car with the UK sports car maker Morgan. I hope you liked the interview. So I'm here at the Eden Sexy Green Car Show with Hugo Spowers from the group River Simple.
Hello, Blake. Nice to meet you.
Can you, really just take over. What do you find exciting about transport? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your design here about Morgan.
Oh, well, I used to work in motorsport, and I sort of got out for all sorts of reasons to do with environmental conscience and so on and so forth, and insufficient room for expression in that field of those concerns. And I, at the time, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew it was going to be nothing to do with cars. And I thought the only future for environmentally sustainable cars was in better batteries. And better batteries is the domain of big companies and big labs and big budgets, and it's not my world at all. And it was in 97, I met Paul Hawken, who wrote Natural Capitalism with Amory Lovins, and he told me all about fuel cells. I'd never heard of them before. And I realised that actually the real opportunities with fuel cells lay not in fundamental science of fuel cell technology or anything like that, but in systems integration, in the pattern of relationships between components in an architecture, and putting the bits together in a different way. And that is my world, because at small teams, it can happen very quickly, it can happen very cheaply. And that's what British motorsport is all about. And that's in the 60s, when Britain really sort of suddenly came to the fore in motorsport. It wasn't through designing better engines or anything like that. It was Cooper and then Lotus just building better cars, just out of steel and aluminium. It was just fundamentally superior systems integration. And I realised that the opportunities, really, for fuel cells lay there. And I equally understood that the auto industry are very, very hard pushed to go the route that I see as being technically plausible. I'm sure they understand it too. There's no slight of them, because there's clearly some very, very bright people there. But they have got an awful lot of legacy constraints and exit barriers from doing what they're doing. They have to incrementally move from the technology that they are deeply rooted in, that they've optimised over 80 years, forwards to a fuel cell future. And of necessity, that means putting fuel cells into the cars they make. And the cars they make, it's not popularly understood, but are hugely optimised around the characteristics of combustion engines. And trying to put a fuel cell, putting a fuel cell in there, means you have to try and persuade a fuel cell to behave like a petrol engine.
Right.
Which
right.
It doesn't do very well. So the technological barriers that are spoken about, which are fuel cell cost and fuel cell power density, and even more hydrogen storage density, I believe are completely artifices of that design strategy of putting fuel cells into production conventional cars. But they're not true in any absolute sense. And if you take a whole system design approach to designing a car around a fuel cell, those barriers disappear.
So we're starting from the ground up. We're starting to develop a whole new car. And what you're saying is also interesting, because it could help incentivize what exists in the UK is a real small niche car maker manufacturing possibility, that if they were to kind of start to design new cars, we could really see a resurgence within, say, the UK economy for making new cars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also the cars that I think that we will end up with won't be made of steel.
Excellent.
And the agglomeration of the auto industry is driven principally by the weird economics of steel bodies.
Yeah.
And if you only make 2 million cars, you'd better combine with somebody else because your unit cost will come down still further.
So where are we going from steel?
Oh, advanced composites. I'm absolutely sure that's the way.
So is that carbon?
Yes, carbon and Kevlar and foams and a whole bundle of different materials used appropriately. And they are far less homogeneous than steel, so you can truly tailor the performance of the structure to the requirements of each element of the vehicle structure, which is not, you can't do with steel. It's the same in every direction, and so you end up with a lot of redundant material.
I think Amory Lovins, is that his name? Lovins,
yes.
At Rocky Mountain Institute, was saying that the composite structure would actually be 10 times stronger in a collision than a steel frame.
It's also much easier to make a car safe if it's lighter.
And it's lighter as well.
Because you've got less kinetic energy to deal with, and that's what really drives the impact performance of the vehicle. I mean, I think that whole system design, another interesting counterintuitive example, because whole system design is all about not judging each element on its own, with comparing it with alternatives. You should only evaluate for cost or weight or performance at the whole system level, the level of the whole car.
Yeah.
And that leads you to some very counterintuitive conclusions. You may end up putting in a component that's more expensive or heavier or less efficient because it delivers a car that's cheaper, more efficient or lighter.
Give us some example.
Well, composite materials, I think, is a great one. That's why I sort of suddenly thought about that. Because the whole system design of the vehicle, not just the level of the vehicle itself, but the whole system that delivers the mobility service, I believe, as I was talking in the talk earlier, I believe that we should move to a sale of service business model, which rewards the minimization of resource throughput, rather than rewarding the maximization of resource throughput, which is what the sale of product does. And then you have to have damage limitation by regulation, which is just not a very clever way of going about things. But if you include all those ideas together, I believe that it's cheaper or more profitable to make cars out of advanced composites without it being more expensive to the customer. And that is because in a sale of service business model, the manufacturer pays for the hydrogen. We would pay the hydrogen bills when the customer fills up with hydrogen, not the customer himself.
Excellent.
So what happens if you build the car in carbon fibre, you end up with a much lighter car.
Yes.
So you can have much lighter motors. You can have a smaller fuel cell, lower power fuel cell. You can have fewer ultracapacitors because there's less kinetic energy to store. All these things. So you save in component cost in the build of the vehicle, but also you're designing the vehicle for maximum longevity because you want to maximise that revenue stream from each car you make. You want it to last as long as possible out there in the market. And all the time, you're paying for the fuel. So the more efficient the vehicle is, the more money you make, or the greater your margin. So if you make it out of lighter material, you make a much bigger margin. Added to the reduced component cost of building the vehicle, it means that actually that more than offsets the increased cost of the carbon fibre up front.
Excellent. And so what you're talking also is about extending that, you're kind of guaranteeing your partnership with the consumer in that you're setting up a partnership which is based on efficiency, and also consumers would be happy with their vehicle.
Well, it puts the manufacturer and the consumer's interest in alignment.
Right.
Because at the moment, if you want the car to be as expensive and unreliable and high maintenance as possible,
opposite each other, aren't they?
They're completely opposed.
Yeah.
Whereas this way, you completely align the interests of the two parties and suddenly you're on the same side.
Yeah.
But also, furthermore, I'd argue that we've got to move that model upstream into the supply chain.
Okay.
Because otherwise, the suppliers have the same relationship with the manufacturer as manufacturers currently have with the customer. Because when the manufacturer who sells us a fuel cell wants us to buy another fuel cell as soon as possible. Whereas if we only lease the fuel cell off him, the longer it lasts in our vehicle, the more money he makes out of each fuel cell he makes.
Excellent. You are listening to We Are Future Proof Podcasts. Please visit our website at www.wearefutureproof.org.uk. In the talk earlier, we were talking a little bit about shared car ownership. You wouldn't own your own car, but you might share it with other people, but you might have like a suitcase which would go into an electronic suitcase which would plug into your glove box, and instantly it personalizes to you. But as soon as you leave the car, you leave that, somebody else plugs in.
Absolutely.
What are some of these future ideas? What do you think about?
Well, I'm absolutely sure that cultural shift will happen much more quickly than we imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, you think of the cultural shift about SUVs over the last few years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened remarkably quickly.
We've worked hard on those, getting rid of them.
Yes, and I'm quite sure that it'll become more and more acceptable for people to share vehicles, especially in urban dwelling, because it is simply more convenient.
Yeah. But we'll also, I mean, the shift, given climate change and given the economic shift, more and more people are moving to the city, so it's going to become more congested. So we can't really see personal car ownership and owning more and more cars, can we?
And the large, and probably the biggest single factor in the rise in congestion is parked cars.
Right.
It's not the ones that are moving.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the more people you can serve with one car, the less fewer parked cars there are around the place.
Well, thank you very much, Hugo. And we look forward to seeing if you get a car into production, what, in the next few years?
About 2 to 3 years, we should have some of our urban cars in trials.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Blake.
You've been listening to a We Are Future Proof podcast. For more information, please visit our website at www.wearefutureproof.org.uk.